The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
He is currently the head football coach of the University of Michigan Wolverines and a former player. His dad and brother are also former players and coaches, but there is more to them than just football. It's time to talk about attacking life each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. This is Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast with Jim Harbaugh.
Welcome to another edition of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast. Coming up in a little bit, head football coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mike Tomlin. So that means both sides of the Ravens-Steelers rivalry will be represented in that interview. Later on in the show, Jack Talk. But right now, guys, it's summertime and football practice is about to get started. But summertime is baseball season. And coach, was a few weeks ago, you were at a Padres game and you got caught on camera.
Yeah, I took daughter Addie and nephew Luke Dearborn to Padres game. Didn't get a foul ball, though. Didn't even get one hit to us. Not even a ricochet. We had great seats, though. I think a lot of people would have been happy with, I mean, the seats pretty much right behind home plate. Clayton Kershaw was pitching, but they got that screen up in front of you.
Yeah.
And it makes it tough to get a foul ball. I know Jack Harbaugh is a guy that could probably talk about this. I mean, some people would say their seats are great, or how about the people that like to sit in the suites, but I mean, that may be the worst seat in the ballpark because you have absolutely no chance of getting a foul ball if you're sitting in a suite.
And no question. It was a strategy. I remember, Jim, when we used to go to Cleveland Old Municipal Stadium, 78,000 seats back when you and John and Jim were about 10, 11 years old, when we went back to see Jackie's parents. And we looked in the stadium, it was about 2,000 fans in a 78,000-seat stadium. And we had seats in that third deck. That's about all we could afford. And I said to you guys, I said, John and Jim, if you don't get a ball today, you are not near the athletes that I think that you are. Because all you have to be able to do is run. There's no place here that you can't get a ball. You remember those days?
Oh, there's no question. And you trained us right from the beginning. I mean, you don't leave a baseball game until the very last out has occurred. Because in those days, 1,500 people at a game, maybe 1,000. And toward the end of the game, hardly anybody, maybe 400 people are still left with multiple sections completely empty. You could cover three or four sections as a 8-year-old kid. And we would get multiple foul balls a game. One time, I think me and John together had like four or five. And I've gotten 20 in my life. I mean, legitimate. They've either a home run or a foul ball or a hit that bounced into the stands. But I don't count the ones where the players throw them to you or don't count batting practice. It's got to be legit. But four of those 20 came on one night in Cleveland Stadium.
I know, I think we told the story, but we were there one time in Cleveland game, and to show you how few fans they were, a guy named Tom McGraw was the first baseman for the Indians. I think it was back in the 70s, and the seventh inning stretch came, and I looked down in the first base coach's box, and you and John were down there with a neighbor kid. He had a Polaroid camera, and he was taking a picture of you, John, and Tom McGraw, and he had both hands over your shoulders, and I'm not sure he gave you a ball at that time, but those days are gone forever now. Security, I mean, you'd have never been able to hit the field. You remember that? Remember that time?
Oh, I remember it really well. It wasn't a kid with a Polaroid camera. It was part of a promotion, and it was really late at night. But it was take a picture with a player after the game, and they had him on the first base line, and they had him on the third base line. John and I got in line on the first base line, and I think that was the night that there was a power outage in the Cleveland Stadium. You know, it must have been like a 3-hour game with a power outage during the game. But anyway, we stayed till the end. Game was over. And John and I were in line. It was a pretty long line, like went all the way up to where the aisle starts curving. So we're in line. And then the thing I remember most about it, other than we did get a picture with Tug McGraw, and I think you got it on your refrigerator, was that I, about middle of the line, I started having to go to the bathroom. And then as we're inching closer to the front of the line, I really had to go. And then I had to make a decision. If I go to the bathroom, then I'm not going to get this picture with Tug McGraw. And I'm like 5 or 6 years old, maybe 7. And I just said, screw it. I peed my pants and got the picture. And the look on my face is, oh, gosh, I hope this isn't going to show up on the picture that I wet my pants. But it did. It showed up in the picture. I had a big, like, round stain on my thigh and growing area.
Did you remember that part of the story, Jack?
I do, only as it's been told. But the one thing about the picture now, that it's somewhat grainy now. It's lost some of its look now. And
well, it's not the same picture. The Polaroid's gone. Mom had it. She took the Polaroid.
Oh, that's right. We took this off your picture, didn't we? It was a little picture.
It's not a Polaroid anymore. In the Polaroid, you could see that I had wet my pants. But in the new, like, she transferred it over to CD somehow. Yeah. And it lost it. So you cannot see the pee stain on my shorts.
You mentioned outages, power outage there. You have been involved in several power outages, haven't you?
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
How is that that you've been, at least we know of at least three power outages that you've been involved in your growing up? How do you explain that?
I don't know. I don't know what the explanation is on that, but that power outage at Cleveland Stadium, remember that one? And then three as a professional coach with the 49ers. One against Mike Tomlin. We were playing a Monday night game against the Steelers in Candlestick, and there was a power outage. And then we had a power outage in a preseason game as well. And then we had the power outage in the Super Bowl. So those are my four power outages.
That'd make a great trivia question for sitting around. Who has been involved in the most power outages in professional football?
Yeah, we might have to do like an Attack Each Day trivia question like in 6 months from now and see who was paying attention. And there's a great answer to the question. How many power outages has Coach Harbaugh been a part of during his adolescence and coaching career?
There you go.
I'm sitting here sulking. The coach has caught 20 foul balls through his years. I mean, I've been to hundreds of games, 15 different ballparks.
Zero?
I have had I don't know if there's ever been one in my section, and I've sat in every different place.
Oh, see, I have one, and I should have had two, but my dad will tell you the story that I had to go to the bathroom, and he took me to the bathroom. And while we were gone, the ball bounced right in my seat, and someone else got the ball. My sister and my mom, I guess, were in our seats, and they didn't get the ball. Someone else grabbed it, but it, like, hit our seat while we were in the bathroom. So I've been given a lot of crap about that over the years. So I think Jim Palmer was on the mound, and, like, Ricky Anderson was on base. It was a big scenario, and I've gotten a lot of grief for that. I have one, at least, but 20 is a – that might be another record, too. We might have to put that into a trivia contest in 6 months, too, because I can't imagine a lot of people that have more than 20 – legit, as you said, foul ball, home run balls in game from a major league park.
Well, that's not just, 20, like I just pulled that number out of the sky. It's exactly 20. It should be 21. I caught a ball in San Francisco against the Diamondbacks. Jeff Morad was involved with the Diamondbacks at that time, and he was one of my early agents. Like when I first went to the Bears, he worked for Lee Steinberg and the Lee Steinberg agency. So I was friends with Jeff Morad, and he called me up, invited me to the game. So Sarah and I go to the game, and Randy Johnson was pitching. I mean, it was a great deal. We were like in owner's section, just at the end of the first base dugout at the park in San Francisco. We're getting peppered. I mean, there was like several different opportunities, but it was a foul ball, and it kind of bent back a little bit toward the field, so I kind of used my old catching experience, knowing that foul ball is going to track its way back toward the field, so turned my back to the infield and caught this ball with my glove clean, and kind of took it out, put it in my fist, raised it up, sat back down, and then this kid, probably about 10, 11, behind me, can I have the ball? Can I have the ball? I go, no, get your own ball. So then Sarah, Jim, that's a kid. You know, you got to give him the ball. I go, no, I don't. It doesn't mean the same unless you get your own ball. It wouldn't even count for him to have that ball. So I'm not giving him the ball. And he goes, come on, mister, can I please have that ball? You know, I'm just a kid. Can I have the ball? I turned around again. I snapped at him. I said, no, get your own ball. And I'm not giving you this ball. So finally, I mean, it took about an inning and a half, but Sarah wore me down and made me give the ball to the kid. So I go, here you go, kid. Here's a ball for you. So I tossed him the ball. And just what I knew would happen. You know, the kid's sitting in good seat. You know, probably got rich parents or whatever. And he gets the ball. Oh, great, look at this. Turns to his buddy or his dad or somebody. Goes, that's the fourth ball I've gotten this week.
Hey,
I looked at Sarah. She goes, Sarah goes, you shouldn't have given him the ball. I go, you're darn right I shouldn't have given them the ball.
That's
really right. 21.
Jim, I'm
really 21.
I need to be a commissioner on this one, and I know I follow baseball and know a little bit about it. It's a play at second base, you know, the double play, shortstop to the second baseman. He has the ball. If he has possession of the ball, if the ball is seated in the glove and he drops it coming out of the glove, it's an out. So you had that possession of that ball long enough that we can make that 21. I'm 21. Here to tell you from now on, you're allowed to go with 21 on that one.
You sure? Okay.
I'm right. Yes.
But yeah, losing the ball in the transfer, it's an out.
It's a transfer. Yeah. That is a legal play, and we're recognizing that.
You got to tell your foul ball story when you were at Milwaukee with Riley.
Oh, yeah.
And hey, did you guys notice that new rule in baseball this year that you don't have to throw four balls to a guy to intentionally walk him?
Yeah, just the automatic walk. Yeah,
you just point to him, yeah.
It's the way it's been in Little League for 100 years. We did major leagues just catching up with him on that rule.
Just saw that the other day. Here's another baseball fact I didn't know. So guy hits a ball in the gap, and he rounds first base and gets thrown out at second. What does it count for?
It's a single and an out.
Good job.
Because it's a single and then a put out, whatever. If it's the left fielder or second base, it's a 1B, and then it's a put out 7-4 in the scorebook.
Well, what happens if a man hits a home run and doesn't touch first base on his way to
out.
To home? Is it
out.
A home run? Or
no, it's out.
No. Oh, what's it marked in the book, though?
It's marked, I believe, as an out.
It's an out.
And it's just a put out by like 2-3 or something because the pitcher throws it.
He doesn't even get credit for a hit.
Yeah, out. Yeah, it's just an out.
Does not get credit for a hit.
Correct.
So if a guy tries to stretch a single to a double, why should that be a hit then?
Well, he touched first base. He completed the
okay,
single,
okay.
And then he was called out at second on the double. So he threw a single.
Anything. Baseball's got it down. I mean, they got their rules down completely. I mean, it's there's nothing to really question about that. But I was interested in it. I probably would have tried to stretch more singles into doubles had I known that I wasn't going to.
You know, it would count as a hit.
The on-base percentage.
Count as a hit.
On-base percentage would have been down, but the hitting average would be up.
Yeah, batting average up, on-base percentage down, so you'd be you'd still get that. And the same recorded number of singles. This is a good trivia episode, another good trivia question. Save that one for down the road. We could do some trivia here on Attack East Day of the Harbaugh's podcast.
So, Dad, tell your story. Brad Ausmus
was the catcher for the Houston Astros.
Great one.
And at the end of the inning, Riley and I were about 15 rows behind the Astros dugout. About the seventh inning, you know, there were seats around us that were empty. So Ausmus got the ball, and he's walking with the ball back to the dugout. He had the ball in his bare hand, and I'm screaming, Brad! Brad! A little kid! I got a little kid right here! 7 years old, Brad! Throw the ball, Brad! And he just flicked the ball underhand. I've never seen anything like it. He just flicked it underhand. Boot, and put it right on my left hand. And I made a clean catch, handed the ball to Riley, got his first ball, gave a salute to Brad Ausmus, and like 15 or 20 years later, I reminded him of that story. He had no recollection. He had no idea. So obviously it didn't mean as much to him as it did to me.
And in that situation, I just so I'm not depicted as a monster here on the podcast, in that situation, ball player, you know, picks up a foul ball or something and throws it into the stands, and you're the lucky fan who gets a souvenir, then in that case I am all for giving it to a kid that's in the section.
Does that count in Riley's tally?
No.
Because he didn't catch it.
No.
Right.
Jim? I've never been prouder of you for you to define that and make that. So I know a lot of fans out there now are a lot closer to you and appreciate you a lot more knowing that you have that rule.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not a monster. the funny, Dad, you'll get a kick out of this, too. You remember the old Tigers games when you listen to them on the radio and Ernie Harwell, George Kell, you know, there'd be a foul ball. And then I can't remember if it was George or Ernie, but they'd always say, there's a souvenir for some lucky fan. So every time there's a foul ball at a baseball game, I'm saying, there's a souvenir for some lucky fan. And so Addie started punching me every time I said that. Dad, Don't you do that every time you go to a ball game? Like, there's a souvenir for some lucky fan?
Remember, the other thing Ernie used to say, a lucky fan from Paw, Michigan, just caught that ball down the right field line. And I thought for a long time, how did he know that guy was from Paw?
There's a lucky fan from Paw, Michigan.
Didn't he do another one like, fastball on the outside corner, strike three? He stood there like the man by the side of the road.
That dad says that all the time.
That's a great one.
Gates Brown hit that one right into the teeth of the wind.
He was the best, wasn't he, Ernie?
The best. No question about it.
All-time great voice for the Detroit Tigers. And always fun talking baseball in the summertime. But right around the corner, it's actually going to be football season as we inch closer to fall camp. So, Coach, when we get to our next opening segment of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, you will actually be in fall camp. How does that make you feel?
Chomping at the bit, biologically, just the biological clock. The vacation is over. We are, it's all football on the brain right now. So, looking forward to our team training hard and the gearing up. You know, there's a season to gear up for, there's the camp to gear up for, there's the opener to gear up for, and you're gearing up for. And I talked to so many high school players, as you know, throughout the summer, and that's what they're all doing. All their messages back to me, or their texts, or their, you know, what they say is, you know, how they're working out and how they're gearing up. Same with our players, they're gearing up, and just how lucky and blessed we all are to have a season to gear up for. And I don't know how many straight years this is for me personally to have a season to gear up for, but just thank God, hit the knees at night, and thank God that I have a season to gear up for.
Coming up next, we're all going to have a great conversation with Mike Tomlin, head football coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Here's a message from our friends at Wells Fargo, a company with a storied past, and a big part of that past was built around building trust. Back in the day when the country headed west for gold, Wells Fargo was the bank trusted to bring it back east. But somewhere along the way, Wells Fargo lost their way. So now they're working hard to earn your trust again. They're making things right by ending product sales goals for branch bankers. They're refocusing on customer satisfaction, making it a top priority. They're working with more transparency and accountability and fixing problems proactively. It's a new day at Wells Fargo, but it's a lot like their first day. See what's new at wellsfargo.com/renew. Established 1852, reestablished 2018.
Coach Tomlin, Jim Harbaugh here. Good to hear your voice.
Coach Harbaugh, how you doing, my man? Good to hear yours as well.
It's Jack Harbaugh. Coach, so good to talk with you.
Oh, likewise, Coach. I enjoyed getting a chance to visit with you a few weeks back, man. I really appreciate that.
You know what I recall about that discussion is our paths and how they crossed a little bit with some of the coaches that we had a chance to. Paul Wiggins' name came up, and Denny Green's name came up, and some of the other players that I coached and worked with.
You know, that's one of the sidebars that I really enjoy about the profession. So, the game and appreciate or coach it, man. I always enjoy getting the opportunity to glean information from those who come before me, man. I really enjoyed that. Coach Wiggins was awesome when we worked together in Minnesota.
And we were out at Stanford with he, and Denny Green was our offensive coordinator back in 80. Jim Fossil was our quarterback coach. Jim was a junior over at Palo Alto High School, and Paul Wiggin was our head coach. Those were fun years to be around with great coaches and super individuals.
And the obvious one, Coach, is you and our brother John. My brother John have been staring at each other across the sideline for 10 years. You know, it's remarkable. The two of you have been I don't know how many 10-year coaches there are in the league besides you two, probably Bill Belichick, but sometimes two and three games a year.
It's been amazing. It's amazing how time flies. I guess the only really frame of reference of time we get an opportunity to visit, we talk about our families, and boy, it's funny. I'm like, how old is your daughter now? You know, that's the frame of reference that we've been at it for some time.
Well, you have a son about the same age as Allison, right? I think Allison is going into her junior year, and you have a son. In what class is he in high school?
Yeah, I actually have two boys, one in 2019 and one in 2020. So, you know, John and I used to talk about, you know, what they wore for Halloween and things of that nature. Now we're talking about, you know, did they come home last night?
That's interesting. The fans out there are watching. They see the two of you meet at midfield before the ball game, and they think you're talking strategy, or you're talking about the last game or the next game, and what you're talking about is what your children wore for Halloween. And that's got to be a revolution for our fans.
They'd be surprised, but I think that's one of the things that you enjoy. You know, I got so much respect for John and the competition that we have. It's funny, in the midst of those moments, the cool conversations that we have talking about our families and such is really a nice sidebar.
Is that for you, Coach Tom? Is that moment, those moments, whether it's with John or anybody else, those 5-10 minutes that you meet with the opposing head coach before a game, is that like the only time on game day where you're not really zoned in on the game, or are you just kind of distracting yourself for a few minutes?
It's a moment of pause. You know, I think we're all kind of in a competitive state once we pull up in that arena or we get off of that bus. But, you know, you've been competing against someone like I have against John for so long. You got so much respect for him and, you know, our shared history. It's human nature to kind of enjoy those moments and then get back to what you're doing.
Do you guys remember, Coach, do you guys remember December 19th, 2011 in Candlestick Park? San Francisco 20, Pittsburgh 3. The one time you guys locked horns against each other?
Yes, I do.
I remember the lights went out.
No question, man. I'll never forget that. You know, I was excited about being in Candlestick, you know, just, you know, that arena and being an AFC guy, not a lot of opportunities, man. That was cool to be in there. And then obviously the lights went out, and that created a different experience. We couldn't get it going again once the lights came back on.
Ravens had a little bit of that same problem in the Super Bowl, yeah, if I recall.
It had nothing to do with that. I've been accused of having had nothing to do with that.
There was, I think, investigation. Jim hit the switch on me.
Hey, Coach, I'd like to ask you about a mutual respect that we have for Coach, and that's Jimmy Haycock. I was at Western Kentucky University for 14 years, won AA football, and became familiar with the coaches. Tell me a little bit about, what's he been there for, 30, 35 years, coaching that same school with fantastic success?
You know, his commitment to that place has taught me a lot about the right approach in this business. You know, Coach Laycock has been there since 1980. Man, he was an 11-year guy when I was there as a freshman.
That's amazing.
And still there. You know, I marvel at it, man. We talked a few weeks back. You know, he's been an encouragement to me. I feel guilty sometimes calling on him because I've drawn from that well so much. But I'm going to keep drawing as long as he's willing.
What years were you there, Coach?
I was there from 90 to 94 as a player. And but, man, Coach Laycock and I have maintained a close relationship throughout. Whenever I've had a significant decision to make from a career standpoint, he's always been a guy that I've called on and gleaned advice from, and I'm appreciative of that.
Well, I think we all have those in our rearview mirror, those that stood tall and whose shoulders we stand on. So, and I have mutual respect for him.
So what was the conversation like when you called him and said that you were being offered an opportunity to be the third head coach in, you know, many, many years in the history of the Pittsburgh Steelers?
He just laughed. You know, he's kind of followed my coaching journey, and I think it's kind of been amusing to him because I've been blessed and really fortunate. And he said, "That's about right. That sounds about right." You know, I think he was amused by it at that point. But you know, he's always been a supporter, and he understands that the mindset that I have about these opportunities and what I'm willing to do in terms of making sure it's done and done right.
When you got that call from Pittsburgh. And you know the history, obviously. Chuck Noll takes over in 69. Cower comes in 92. To know, when you look around the league, you see so many coaches coming and going and coming and going. You were given an opportunity in an organization. What is it about that organization that makes it so unique that they don't push coaches out if you have, say, one or two down years?
You know, I really think it comes from ownership. The Rooney family, man, this is their family business. They've been in it since the 30s. And, man, they know what it is they're doing. They know what it is they look for. And I think that allows them to be steady. steady sometimes when things around them aren't so steady. And there's a resolve and commitment there that's unique. And when you work for men like that, and families like that, all you want to do is perform for them. I appreciate the environment that I'm in from that standpoint, but by no means do I take it for granted. I understand that the proof is in the pudding, man, and I'm trying to deliver for those guys each and every year. And this year, obviously, my focus is on 18.
Oh, it's an amazing thing. You know, I was here with Bo Schembechler back 1973 to 79, and we had those Ohio State, Michigan type football games, and the Bo and Woody 10-year war that they had. And now I see you and John, Pittsburgh and Baltimore would be much like those Michigan-Ohio State games, and I think that's what makes professional football and college football so unique, are those relationships and those great rivalries.
And, Coach, it's really humbling to be a part of. That's why I've always loved Big Blue. When I coached college ball years ago, I'd worked at Michigan camps and had an opportunity to meet Coach Schembechler and Coach Carr and those guys, and I just really loved what Big Blue was about and bought into it as an early age from a coaching perspective. All I ever wanted to do was, man, coach at Michigan, man, and get a little house off of State Street somewhere, you know? It's funny how sometimes God got different plans for you.
Isn't that true? places that it takes us.
No, all right, Matt Dudek, make sure you record that, Matt Dudek, and we're going to put that in writing.
Absolutely, 100%, oh, Coach.
I've been at the bowling alley a couple nights a week, you know what I mean?
Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all for free. No credit card needed, no sign up. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. What are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all your favorite devices today. If you like this show, check out the Steve Austin Show each Tuesday and Thursday exclusively on Podcast One. Join the Pro Wrestling Hall of Famer and action movie star as he shares tales from his new life, unbelievable past adventures, and covers all the happenings in the pro wrestling world. So don't miss the Steve Austin Show with Stone Cold Steve Austin each week on Podcast One. Also remember to rate and review.
Now back to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast.
Mike Tomlin joining us here on the podcast. He knows his Ann Arbor, having been here many times. But I got to tell you, Coach, we have a Yinzer in the studio, and it's been 10 minutes. He's barely said a word. And I think he's just too excited to have the head coach of the Steelers on with us.
Absolutely. You got to be starstruck when you have the Steelers head coach on. I mean, my family would be disappointed if I said something stupid. So I'm just trying to be quiet and just enjoy the moment of everyone talking.
Man, PA boys are all over this football world, man. I tell you, I don't turn a corner without running into one. It's a beautiful thing.
Now, Coach Tomlin's always joked with me, him and Kevin Colbert, when we used to do some videos at a former school, was that when we do really silly dressing up as gladiators and cowboys and everything else. And he's razzed me pretty good a couple of times, him and Kevin Colbert. So they're sitting in the staff room watching him, calling me, laughing at me. So it's been a good time.
There's no doubt, man. You know, we love to be entertained for sure.
Coach, anything changing or anything you'd like to see changed rule-wise, new catch rule, anything jump out at you?
You know, I just, not necessarily from a rules perspective, I think we're moving in the right direction in terms of some of them things. I just, you know, as a football man, as somebody that loves football, I just wish more of us would take opportunities to talk about the positive virtues of the game, what it does for young people, right, and how it can help shape them in terms of being strong young men. There's so much negativity in our game right now around injury and so forth that I want to take up that charge. And I know that John has done a heck of a job of that, and I want to join him in standing up for football, and I want to encourage others to do the same. We're losing the real blessing of the game in some of these discussions, man. It is an awesome experience for young men. I knew it was for me and countless others, man, and I wouldn't change a thing about my football experience.
Well, I'm in total agreement on that. There's so much about football that has molded all of our lives, you know, far deeper than, you know, even game day. And we need to focus on that, as you said. And you said it so well. I'm in total agreement with you.
Total agreement. I'm watching my young boys grow up in this game, you know, and they've been around it all their life. But the playing of the game, there's certain lessons in the playing of the game, and watch them grow as young men and understanding those things and overcoming fear and meeting challenges and expectations and doing it all in a team concept. The way football is structured is, I think, invaluable, and I'm watching them benefit from it, and that's a treat.
So I know there has been a, I don't know if the correct phrase is attack on the game because of head injuries and things like that. Well, are there things that you would like to see maybe not change, but just slightly tweak just to keep that part of it a little safer without altering the game itself? Because I think some fans and people in the game are worried that if you change too much of it, that you're going to actually change the game of football.
No, I really don't focus necessarily on change. And I just want to focus on the young people and the education, and not only the education of them, but those that work with them. I think we're all called on as leaders in this space, man, to help those that develop young people. I know that I try to. The people that work with young football players in my community, man, whether it's camps and clinics and teaching proper technique or just general discussions talking about attitude and messages to convey to the young people, I think that's really significant. So that's where I focused my energies in recent years. It's kind of been easy for me because, you know, my kids are in that close proximity to me. I want to challenge myself even to step outside of some of the spaces where my boys are in that effort.
Coach, a couple of things I want to just say. Two of my trusted friends and allies in the game of football are on your staff, and please pass along my best. Daryl Drake. Daryl Drake was with me and our staff at Western Kentucky University back in 1988 when I went there to coach, and he was with us for 4 years, and what a beautiful family he has and an outstanding coach and person that he is. And the other one was Jerry Osafsky. I coached at the University of Pittsburgh with Mike Godfrey back in 87 and 88, and Jerry was our middle linebacker, backbone cracker. I mean, he was all over the field and another outstanding guy. So please pass along my best to those two.
Coach, I certainly will, man. Two quality men, and I'm honored to have those guys as a part of our staff.
You've had an opportunity to coach under some the legends, Hall of Fame type guys in the game. Obviously, Tony Dungy recently inducted in the last few years in the Hall of Fame. But another guy that you worked, spent some time working for, John Gruden's back in it. What's it going to be like when you have that opportunity to face him once again?
Man, I really look forward to that, man. I got so much respect for Coach Gruden and learned so much from him, man. We had such an experience together, you know. I was a part of my first world championship on his staff, and, you know, when you experience that, you change forever. Man, I just appreciate the lessons learned from him, watching him day to day. You know, everybody talks about his engaging personality, and it is that, man. But I've watched this guy day to day, man. What a football worker. What a lover of the game of football, one who respects the game of football. I enjoyed our film sessions, man. I gleaned a lot from him and really have taken a lot in terms of how I prepare myself in terms of watching how he did it when I had an opportunity to work for him.
Another one for you, Coach, is the NFL Network recently put out their top 100, the players that they voted on to rank them. And the number two guy on the list is one of your guys in Antonio Brown. We see Antonio Brown, the player. We see him, you know, flying by defensive backs, making big plays. But tell us about Antonio Brown, the person. What's he like?
You know, I always say this about Antonio when given an opportunity, because I want everybody to know it. He's the most highly conditioned guy on our team and one of the hardest workers. And I think that's a good basis for the career that he has put together. Make no mistake, this guy is unbelievably talented and has some God-given abilities. But to watch him day to day, I think anybody that works alongside him will tell you that his level of conditioning, what he is willing to do, is probably more impressive than the things that he's capable of doing. And that's just a testament to him. You know, that guy came into the sixth-round pick out of Central Michigan and deserves all the credit for the career that he's been able to put together to this point. And the funny thing, and it's not funny, but it's just really indicative of him, he cares very little about that. You know, this guy is committed to the challenges that lies ahead and delivering a world championship for the Steelers.
I did find it amazing that the number one and number two guys, both in that list, both played college football in this state of Michigan, and both guys were six-round draft picks. It just goes to show that the inexact science of the draft can be, where you have Tom Brady at number one, and you've got your guy, Antonio Brown, at number two sitting there. So for you, as you get through the end of July, do you start to get the itch to get back out there as training camp is getting closer and closer?
I got to be honest with you, man. Summer is over for me on the 5th of July.
There you go. Okay.
Mentally, I would have gone yesterday. But that's just, I think back to my childhood. After the 4th, man, you've always been ready for football, and that's how I've always been all my life. I'm just ready for the light to turn green.
Ah, there you go.
And we do.
Nice.
Coach, I'm sure, Coach Harbaugh, you're the same way. As you're on vacation now, but there's got to be that moment where that switch is going to flip, that you're going to be ready to strap, lace those shoes back on and get ready to go.
Yes, I mean, same as Mike. I mean, you're just, there's a biological clock that you have, and, every day just planning out right now the training camp, putting together the scripts, and trying to find a way to make it even better. So just engulfed with that right now.
And Coach Tomlin, before we let you go, and we're joined by Mike Tomlin here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, I have to ask you about another player on your team. And for a show that has a lot of Michigan pull to it, a lot of Michigan feel to it, obviously with it being Coach Harbaugh's podcast, we can still draw inspiration from guys from Ohio State. And obviously now I'm talking about Ryan Shazier and what he's been able to so far just be able to do just to get back to starting to walk. And you're right there, right by him as he goes through the process of getting back. And I know he wants to play football again. For me, I would like him to be able to play, whether he plays or not again. I would just love to see the recovery part of it. But take us inside a little bit of his recovery and how he's been doing.
It's really been an amazing thing to have a ringside seat for. Not that I'm surprised by it. He's an amazing young man. But to watch he and his fiance Michelle deal with this adversity in the mature manner in which they have, man, we're just so proud of those guys. Obviously, he's still in the recovery stage and rehabilitation stage, and he's attacking that every day the same way he attacked the game of football. We'll see what lies ahead in terms of his football career. Really, that's not my focus right now. I just want to support him in every way that we can and keep him connected with the group. Man, he's been not only an inspiration to us in terms of how he's dealt with this adversity, but he's been helpful to us as well. He's a sharp young football man. He's willing to put his hand in the pile. He's done everything that we've asked him to do, man. He's went out and evaluated talent at pro days. He's been a part of the draft process for us. And his perspective is an interesting one because he's a young guy. And so, I want to listen to what he has to say about the mentality of these young people and things of that nature as they come into the league. He's been so helpful to me in so many other ways that I hadn't anticipated. It's just an honor to work with him, and we'll continue to support him and be surprised by the extraordinary things he does.
Well, you can tell that Buckeye that the Wolverines are pulling for him, too, because that's an amazing story to watch him come back. And, we know when to put down the rivalry lines and to support our fellow human, which obviously in this case we're supporting Ryan and hoping he gets back to whether it's playing football or just, walking to be able to play with kids, or whatever. In between, where the Wolverines are supporting him here too.
He will appreciate that. I think that's one of the things that's really been humbling and exciting to him, the support that he's gotten globally from Steeler fans, non-Steeler fans, Ohio State fans, non-Ohio State fans, non-football fans, And, things happen for a reason, and boy, he's really taken those unfortunate circumstances to inspire others and to educate others and learn something himself. And it's just the approach that he's taken to it has been really awesome.
Thank you, Coach. We appreciate your time.
Man, hey, you guys have a great day, man. It's always awesome to be on with Big Blue. Thank you.
These days, news travels lightning fast, which is great if you're a sports fan. Between status updates, breaking news notifications, and Twitter feeds, you can always be up to the minute on every team and every game. While this is great for sports, it's the opposite when it comes to buying a car. Go online and you're bombarded with numbers, invoice, list price, dealer price. It's hard to know how to recognize a good price. Not anymore. Introducing True Price from True Car. It's the only price you need to know because it's exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories. How do you know if your True Price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want, so you know how to recognize a good price. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their True Price competitively so they can win your business. business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
This is Jack Talk.
I want to listen. I want to be better. I want to be the best I can be.
Welcome to our team. The team.
Jack Talk.
As you get older, you get to be 78 years old. Here's what I find. Hair grows in places that it hadn't been before.
Welcome to hashtag Jack Talk.
Now time for another edition of Jack Talk here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. I want to thank once again Mike Tomlin for joining us here on the show. Jack, that wasn't weird for you. I mean, you're the son of the head football coach of the Baltimore Ravens.
You know what,
Matt, you can stay out of this conversation, you yinzer.
You know what? It's what coaching's all about. It was Bo and Woody. I mean, 365 days a year, they were best friends and they were competitors and they fed off of each other. And I see Mike Tomlin and John that way. I see Urban. I see D'Antonio. I see Jim the same way. But that one time of the year, you're going to come together. I mean, all bets are off. Now it's competition at its finest. So it was fantastic experience to be with Mike and hear his perspective on things.
It is funny to hear him talk about those 3 minutes before the game when coaches meet, because they're always smiling. And coaches don't smile on game day unless they have something devious going on in their head about the game, because they're so razor focused on the game. So they're talking about your grandkids' Halloween costumes.
Exactly.
And they're goofing in just about 3 minutes. It's an escape before kickoff, but that's kind of what this podcast is. We are your escape from the everyday grind of football, which is about to get here once again. How about that? Football season, when we come back for our next podcast, fall camp will be underway, and I know you guys are really looking forward to the season, and team building is always a big part of the summertime and getting the guys ready. Bo, obviously, he left that behind. The team, and he left that behind, and it still carries.
It does, and it's so good, and as we begin the season, we always kind of rally around that coming together. It's almost a new year for football. I mean, it's January 1st for football when you come together, the team. We mentioned, I'm reminded of a story. It's a story about a father in New York City. It was a Saturday morning, and they decided to go into the city to celebrate the city in the middle of January of the summertime, and he had two young sons, and they're walking around New York City, and they came upon a construction site, a giant construction site, and this skyscraper was being built, about halfway built, and father looked at it with his sons, and as they walked around, there was a canvas fence around it, and there was kind of a break in the canvas, and as they looked through that opening, they saw two workers. They were taking a little bit of break about 10 o'clock in the morning, and they were sitting there and having a little lunch and having a refreshment, and he got their attention. The father got their attention, and two workers looked up, and they were close enough that he could talk, and the father said to him, "What are you doing? What are you doing here?" And the one worker said, "Well, can't you see we're building a cathedral here, and we're cutting rock. That's what we're doing. We're stone cutters, and we're cutting rock. That's what we're doing." And he said it in a way that wasn't flattering for him, and it wasn't flattering for the job that he was doing. And you could see the guy; he was all sweaty, and his face was crusted with dust and sweating. And the father said, "Oh goodness!" And then he said to the other one, "And you're doing that?" He says, "No. I'm part of a team. It's building a magnificent cathedral." And he was no longer a stone cutter, but he was an important member of that particular team. And the father thought that was a tremendous lesson for his young children. It's all about attitude. It's all about how you look at things. It's all about how you go to school in the morning, how you're looking at the teacher. If you look at it in a positive way, with a good attitude, you are building a magnificent cathedral, and that magnificent cathedral is you. And then that's all part of the process. And so I think Bo Schembechler, when he talked about the team, he was talking each year as we begin a season about building that magnificent cathedral, that football season, together as a team. You might be the starting quarterback. You might be a scout team player. You might be a special team player. You might be one of the 115. You might be 114. You might be 113. But still, you're just not cutting stone. You're building a magnificent cathedral, and you're building a football team that will be remembered for the ages.
Jack Talk, always fun here on the show. There's so much anticipation this time of year. Matt, you could probably feel it as
you go through July is really slow, right? Because the coaches are on vacations and it's their last opportunity to go away for a little bit. Coach has been away. Jack, I know you've had a chance to get away a little bit here and there, but the building gets quiet and then the murmurs and the rumbling starts to pick up in that second, I guess the third week of July, it starts to get a little louder in the building a little bit. It's right. I haven't been in the building. We've been coming down here to the station to do this. So it's a road trip for you guys. So I haven't had a chance to feel that, but I'm sure that there's that every season, that build up, those weeks leading up to before the kids come back when camp really gets underway in earnest.
Yeah. It's like Coach said, it's the building and the anticipation of a new team. And yeah, the freshmen are here. They've gotten to experience some classes and they've gotten to experience some weights. And now we're going to get back. The coaches are coming off the road, are coming off the vacation refreshed. And they're all chomping at the bit, as Coach said, to get back into it. And that first team meeting is always one of my favorites. When we start the season, you start camp, you do the pictures, you do all the headshots, you do all the compliance paperwork, you do all that stuff. And then you have that first team dinner, and then at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night, the head coach gets in front of the team and kind of lays out the goals and kind of lays out the expectations and lays out all the different things that are going to be important to the team's success. And that attitude, it kind of gathers you, puts everybody together and pushes us forward through camp. And I last year was my first one with Coach Harbaugh, and I think back to that first team meeting, and he talked about blue collar, and he passed out the blue collar shirts from the summer to the guys who did all the right things. And I'm sitting there in the back, and actually, I don't know if Coach would remember this. Maybe this would be better suited not for Jack Talk, but I have a picture of my dad, who is an HVAC mechanic, and he passed away about 10 years ago. And I have it in my office. He's lifting a refrigerator up by himself in this picture. And I'd never seen it until he had passed. And I had that above my desk because he worked his butt off so I could sit at a desk every day. And I took that picture right after that team meeting. I walked to my office. I took that picture and I went to show Coach. I don't know why. Heck, I was only working here 10 days at that point. He barely knew my name. No, that's not true. But it's one of those. And I said, Coach, what you said today moved me in a way that I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy to come to work. That attitude that Coach Jack just spoke about, I felt it last year. Last year at this time, again, I walked that picture and said, this is my dad. And he's the reason why I can be here right now. And it was just really, it was important to me, but I felt like that message was to 130 people in the room, but I felt like he was talking to me. And I'm not going to dictate the success of the season or anything. My job is to get players for the next following season. But I felt at that moment he was talking only to me in that room, and if everybody had that same feeling, I knew that we can push forward and have a great season. And so I look forward to that first team meeting and building that cathedral.
If you talk about first meetings, I had 46 of them.
Wow.
First meetings, and that to me defines. I mean, you put months and months into preparation for that meeting. And when we were at Western Kentucky University, we had a coach there by the name of Jimmy Fikes. Jimmy Fikes had been at Western for like 60 years. He came there as a student, and then he came there as a graduate assistant. Then he was an assistant coach. Then he was the head coach. Then he was the athletics director. And each year that I was there and he was healthy enough, I would have him come to our first meeting and tell the same story every single year for 8, 9, 10 years. And this is a story that he told. He talked about like 2,000 years ago, there was a philosopher and there was a prophet amongst the people in this community. And there were people there, scribes and Pharisees, and people that thought he was getting too big, thought he was getting too strong. He was gathering a group around him that was threatening them. So they wanted to trick him. They wanted to put him down. So the way they did it was, they came, the head of this group, and he had a bird in his hand. It's a bird. I have a bird in my hand. And they asked this great philosopher, is the bird dead? Or is the bird alive? If you know so much and you can predict so much, tell us, is that bird dead or alive? And the young man realizes if he said the bird was alive, he would crush it in his hands. The bird is dead. If they said the bird was dead, he was open his hands and the bird would fly away. Okay. So the great philosopher looked him in the eye and said, whether the bird is dead or the bird is alive rests in your hands. And then he would go on to tell the team, our team, this season, this year, the success of our football team rests in your hands, each of your hands. Again, whether you're the starting quarterback or you're a scout team player, it rests in your hands by your attitude and how you approach this season. So that was the way you mentioned opening meeting.
Yeah.
That was one of the ways. And it wasn't my word. It was the word of Jimmy Fikes, and I still remember it and have passed it along to anyone that will listen. But I think it's great, great philosophy.
That's
and
great
attitude.
I'm looking forward to hearing about the first meetings with the Michigan football team when we come back next week. Practice is going to be underway. I know that everyone's going to be excited about that. And what do you guys figure about 2 weeks after that? The guy's going to be really itching to hit somebody that's not wearing maize and blue, and really looking forward to that game down in South Bend, Indiana. I'm guessing that maybe not even 2 weeks, they'll be ready to hit somebody else. Looking forward to talking some football. Michigan football's practice will be underway when we get back next week here on the podcast. We want to thank Mike Tomlin for joining us here as our weekly guest. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, listen via the Podcast One app or on podcastone.com. You can contact us with hashtag Jack Tuck or with at AED Podcast or at Ira in Ann Arbor. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes. We want to thank Podcast One and our great sponsors, True Car and Wells Fargo. Have a great week and keep attacking each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Thank you for listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, here on Podcast One. Don't forget to subscribe at podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.